अवतार मेरे बाबा की चे जय बाबा टू ऑल बाबा लवर्स लिसनिंग टू दिस रिपोर्ट अबाउट माय एक्सपीरियंसेस विद बिलव्ड बाबा. This is Dana Field. The question, when did you meet Baba, is not always a simple one. In my case, I didn't know it was Baba. He came to me as a majestic presence just as I was about to fall asleep one night in the winter of 1953. It was not so much the presence of love or the presence of power, it was majesty. And Baba gave me then my first and only experience of true humility. I felt like a pauper would in the presence of a king. I had no idea of the significance of the experience or that it was someone. But it turned out to be Baba's call to me. I didn't know that it was Baba's call then or even later, but I realized that it was in this way. In the fall of 1954, when the men went to Mehrabad for Baba's darshan, Baba asked Will Backett in my presence, did you read the pamphlet that was handed out to you, My Call? And that was meant for me, so that eventually I connected that as the original darshan of Baba. And when I met Baba in the physical body in the fall of 1954 at Mehrabad, Baba asked me, have you met me before? I said, no. Baba said, you have. You don't remember. You have known me always. You are my own. I love you. I will help you. I tell you with the authority of my divine ego that you will see Baba in all his glory in everyone and in everything. And Baba also said, my love brought you here. I was somewhat incredulous because I had to cash an insurance policy to go to India and borrow money also. And I had a miserable time because I had given up my diet and went by boat. On top of that, I gave up meat eating for a month during the stay in India, which Baba appreciated very much. He threw me a kiss, and eventually I realized that that was it. Baba seeks some people. Those that are resigned in heart and mind to him, like Margaret Crask, because Baba said to her when he came to the West the first time, 1931, "Your love brought me here." And in my case, my love brought you here. I resisted the longing of my heart for God, mentally. And this was unfortunate because Baba has to be met with the heart and created many difficulties and embarrassing moments. And it threw the burden upon the beloved to keep drawing me to himself. Well, after the first darshan of beloved Baba on the subtle in 1953, the end of the year, a couple of months later, I was on my way to New York from Los Angeles, in spite of the fact that I had decided never to go back to New York. I really had no reason to go there. First, I stopped off in Elko, Nevada for about a month. I had to pay off some bad karma. And it was done this way. I didn't know why I had to do it. I went around to every house in the town trying to sell some roofing and siding and roofing. And not a one person responded favorably. And at one place I was threatened with a gun. And it was done during very cold weather. But that finished a particular heavy karma I had. Once in New York, I attended some metaphysical, so-called New Thought meetings, and one day saw in the New York Times an ad, "Meher Baba, the Perfect Master," a meeting of the Monday night Baba group, public meeting. I went there. I wasn't particularly impressed because Phyllis presided or introduced the reader, there was no speech, was very reticent, bashful it seemed, and Darwin Shaw simply read from the discourses. That was it. However, it was a nice atmosphere, and I asked Fred Winterfeld whether I could come to the meeting in his home. He hesitated. And, however, I did go. And Baba knew of this because in 1956 in New York, in the presence of Fred Winterfeld and John Bass, he said to them, "Who invited you?" And he was referring to me. Nobody had invited me to the Baba group, and so that was another cue that it was Baba's love that drew me. Nobody was particularly attracted to me. It was not my merit. I believe it was around the 25th of June when I came to the group, and very shortly afterwards a call came from Baba via cable to invite Western men, whoever wanted to go, to Baba's Darshan, Mehrabad, starting September 12th. As I didn't have any money, and I'd forgotten about the insurance policy, I thought I couldn't go, and made no effort to go because nobody invited me to go. Again, there was, eventually Fred Winterfeld revealed to me jealousy, because I had a good education and neither Fred nor John Bass were particularly educated. And also, evidently they felt that I wasn't ready, which was so. However, suddenly Adele Walkin, presently Adele McEwen, came back from the country where she was teaching children, and said to me, "You, why don't you go?" I said, "I will, even if I have to beg, borrow, and steal the money." She said, "That's the spirit." And then she tried to prepare me. She told me, for instance, that Baba is the center of eternity. Well, that was like a koan of the Zen Buddhist movement. I couldn't make head or tail out of that, but anyway, I was impressed by it. But certainly, I had very little preparation for Baba's darshan. However, Baba took matters into his own hands. Everything fell into my lap on a certain day just before the deadline for me to get my ticket for the boat trip. I didn't have enough to go by plane. Baba wanted me to go by boat so that I would have enough time, because I would have to then leave a month before the others did. And on the first leg of the journey, crossing the Atlantic, 2 days out, the first person I spoke to was a young Hindu yogi, a Brahmin, a graduate of University of Columbia, in international law, very fine young man. And he had Baba's darshan in New York. Baba said to him, gave him a message, and he wouldn't tell me what it was, of course, but considering it a guru mantra, very sacred. But he said that every word was a pearl. And he recognized Baba as a perfect master. However, he wouldn't go to Baba's darshan when I pressed him. And I said, "Is it because you're a Brahmin and Baba is a Zoroastrian?" He said, "Yes." There it was, pride. And when we got off at Bombay, his relatives met him, and I could see that there was that difficulty. Tradition, so on. But he sang bhajans for me, told me about Ramakrishna, and gave me quite a few ideas about spiritual life. But he gave me one bum steer, and that was that the main thing in meeting a perfect master is to ask him for an order. And that's wrong, because to pressure a master is the last thing one should do. and it reacts upon one. And the point is not to ask for an order, but to obey it. The result was that I asked Baba for orders, and he kept giving me orders, and I didn't recognize that they were orders, and kept pressuring Baba. The result that I had a accident in the car at 70 miles an hour, but was protected by Baba. And so was quite almost unhurt. This yogi transferred to the second ship that I was taking to India from Southampton. And 2 days out on this second ship, the Corfu, I was informed that there was another Baba lover on the board ship. I was rather surprised because it was a small ship and I had seen everybody practically, especially in my own class, second class. We were having meetings from the first day till the last, 18 days, 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. And that's one way Baba was preparing me for meeting him. Fred Marx was the one that was aboard, and I didn't know it. He didn't know about me. And we were in the same cabin. So that was one of Baba's little jokes. Later, Baba said to Fred Marx, "You were used to bring Dana, or you were credited with bringing Dana to me." Because he was quite a help. He had been with Baba since 1937, although this was his first darshan of Baba. And he said in a letter, I go to be accepted by him. And there was a rivalry between the yogi and Fred Marx for my presence, because they didn't particularly care for one another, and I stuck with the yogi more than with Fred Marx, and he complained eventually. So I divided my time between them, and both helped me. The two people that saw me off on the boat on leaving New York were Beryl Williams and Philip Dupuy. Beryl asked me to ask Baba ask in India for some beads for her to repeat Baba's name with. Let's see what is the name of those beads. Forget at the moment. However, I did not do it. And in fact, I didn't give her greetings to Baba. I did hand Baba a bottle of bay rum for his hair that she has sent. No, I didn't hand it to him because the customs confiscated it because it had a high content of alcohol. And there was prohibition in India then. So I told Baba about it, and Baba said, "Well, you keep it." I didn't thank Baba for it. I didn't realize it was prasad. It wasn't confiscated. I got it back on going back. Then I gave it to I shared it for a while with Fred Marx and Will Backett. And then I gave it to the head steward as instead of a tip, and he didn't like it. But I explained to him it was Brassan. I have a bald head, so I thought, well, what's the use of using that? I didn't realize the importance of Brassan myself. So I palmed it off on him. When I got back, I told Phyllis that I gave her love to Bob, but not Beryl's. And Beryl was in the next room. They were rooming together. I didn't know she was present. And Phyllis seemed to get satisfaction from that because they evidently didn't get along well. Eventually, Beryl wrote to me years later. How did she feel? Referring to a number of she's, including herself, without realizing it. It was, I think she was quoting money. Beryl, as we know, got realization, so I should not have belittled her to that extent. It was spiritual ignorance on my part. Prejudice galore. Philip Dupuy was a mystery man, and Baba told us not to discuss him. He had been a Catholic and reacted to ritual. He just was against it. And then we were in the Narayana Narnavas Dadachandji's apartment in Bombay on the return trip. In Bombay. He was the only one that didn't bow down to Baba's picture when we took his, when sang his aarti and took his darshan. On the way back, when I got off the boat in New York, I thought there might be a number to meet me because it was at least a month after the others had arrived that I came by boat. However, there was only Fred Winterfeld, and I was very lucky to have him come because I didn't have a cent. I just had spent all my money, and I had to stay at their house for 2 days. They were very kind to keep me there. I might mention something that comes to my mind at the moment. In my first interview with Baba, he showed his omniscience, as he usually does, by saying, "It is all one." It so happened that it was a non sequitur as far as what we were discussing was concerned, but my guru for 10 years, from 1933 to 1943 in New York and Chicago, had written a book called Back to the Nameless One, Poems. And I always wondered just who this Nameless One is. And I had, in fact, made a decision later in 48 to try to find out for the rest of my life who this one is. I took it as a mantra. And when Baba said, "It is all one," I was not impressed because it was. It had nothing to do with what we were talking about. But Baba was showing me his omniscience without my realizing it. I realized it much later. And that is the way with many things that Baba said to me. The meaning of it was hidden in a time capsule, and eventually it unfolded, so that even to this day some capsules open up. Baba said to me about this guru. I asked Baba, I had written down a series of questions, and one of them was, how can such a great soul fall so low? And Baba said, don't call people great souls. The greatness of soul is a plane of perfection. Don't criticize him. Forget him. He's working with an illusion. Now there, Baba was telling me, don't criticize in general. As I had that habit, I was negative. And the greatness of soul in Hindi is Maha Atma, Mahatma, plane of perfection, one of the planes. I think it's the fifth plane. Another statement Baba made was, think of that loved one in America. I didn't know who it was. I thought maybe it was Adele, because I had asked Baba for her hand. And however, I admitted I wasn't in love with her, and Baba pressed me. But it turned out to be eventually that it was my daughter who had drowned at the age of 6. And I was told by the theosophists where I belong that I should forget her so that she could be free from this earth. But Baba said just the opposite, and that often happens. It happened, for instance, with my diet. I had been told that I should eat raw food and not eat honey, because honey is for bees. And then Baba said to me, do you diet? Why do you diet? Why don't you eat cooked food? And Baba had a hard time to get me away from the particular diet I was on. And eventually I began eating raw honey, which is an excellent, you might say food supplement for a number of reasons. So there I was going against my own convictions. In fact, what happened with my diet is that it was a compromise. I had been eating only organic food, and then Baba did not require that I give that up entirely, just some of it. And as for the, in other words, there was balance, which is a key to Baba's teaching. And as for the raw food, my system did not assimilate or break down the minerals, so that I had to have, for 4 months, injections, shots. And then by eating the cooked food after that, I was able to get the necessary minerals. And Baba did say, he pulled me, and I fell over him on where I was sitting on the couch. That was in Hollywood, 1956, and he said, do you diet? Why do you diet? See, you have no energy. And so, in spite of all that eating, raw food, lots of it, I had no energy. But once Baba blessed my dried fruits and the cooked food, and I used to soak and or cook a little bit of the dried fruits also, so that my diet was completely cooked in obedience, it worked out nicely. At the time, Baba got up from the couch, and Marion Florsheim was standing at some distance, about 10 feet away, or 5 feet from Baba. And Baba, she was reading and was not even looking at us, and Baba ran towards her, and that's a short distance. And she just still didn't look up, and or if she did, she didn't. She went back to reading, and Baba went back and ran again to her. This time faster, with mincing little steps. And I saw he had tiny wings on his ankles. 2 pairs of wings. Baba was saying thus, eventually I understood it, that you see you have no energy, and her name was Energy. In running towards her, that she wasn't pressing him, she wasn't pressuring him for his attention, and yet her love drew him to her. Baba was running towards her, and in my case he had to pull me towards himself, and I was unwilling to follow him even then. So there's again the difference between those that love Baba and those that resist love. Another thing Baba said to me, Baba asked me about lust, and I hedged the question. I said, I was married to the wrong partner. In fact, I wasn't aware that I had lust. Hadn't thought about it. I hadn't thought that it was sinful to think of women. So then Baba changed his question. He said, tell me, frankly, do you have a bad thought sometimes? Well, I even had to hesitate about that. I wasn't aware of having a bad thought. And I said, yes. So Baba said, when you have a bad thought, let it come, let it go, don't act on it. When you have a good thought, let it come, let it go, and act on it. When you have a bad thought, repeat my name and image me. Well, I never really was able to image Baba well, although I tried, but eventually it worked out this way, that in other words, I wasn't able to concentrate on Baba's form as required in the personal meditation, one of the steps in thinking of Baba's qualities of his, and thinking of him with love and so on. I never meditated. I've never meditated, even after meeting Baba. And that is not my path, and I simply can't do it. For 1.5 hour, I did meditate, and at that time, there were mosquitoes in my apartment, and Baba did not want me to kill them, and so I just let them crawl all over me while I was meditating, and they drove me deeper into the subtle, and I had a very fine half-hour meditation, and that was it, and I thought I had broken through into a higher state of consciousness, but that is not the way it works with Baba. It's love that is the breakthrough. Anyway, it was a good experience, and it was the result of obeying Baba. But then I have been able to image Baba in thinking of his times I met him, and in relation to the experience and what he said, and of Baba's films, of Baba's pictures. At one time, I memorized all the pictures I had on the walls in my apartment, and I have practically all my pictures on the walls and tables. And I was able to mentally go around the room and in order and image the many pictures. I had about 175 pictures. Of course, I must have missed some. Eventually, I wasn't able to do that. In fact, my mind resisted so much that I wasn't even able to repeat Baba's name for 2 months. And As a result, I got sick, more or less sick. I lost contact with Baba. Baba cabled to Phyllis here in Los Angeles, where's Dana? And then I realized what he meant, because in 1958, that was earlier, Nariman Dadachandji said to me when I arrived there at the darshan late, where Baba asked for you a dozen times yesterday, where's Dana, where's Dana? So evidently I had lost, you know, contact. And only by Baba's repeating my name was Marguerite Poli and Christabel Bevan, the three of us, were we able to arrive safely. We had a rough time coming there. Seven planes were used, and there was a terrible rainstorm and while we were in a small plane. Anyway, we made it. By Baba's grace. And as a result of not repeating Baba's name, I had some trouble with in my intestines and so on. And I developed insomnia. However, both these have practically left me after a couple of years. That's Baba's mercy. In that saying of Baba's to me, if a bad thought comes, let it come, let it go, and a good thought come, let it go, act on it, and the other one is don't act on it, that contains the path of non-sanskaric action. And the provisional ego. It's remarkable how Baba can say these things. And I never heard him or read about his saying the same thing to anyone else. And it's, as Sam Cohen repeats, the perfect master never repeats himself. He doesn't have to. He can say the same thing in infinite ways. This reminds me of Malcolm Schloss. He had been with Baba since 1931. And he was with Baba in the Nasik ashram in 1937 with that group. Now, despite all that training and contacts with Baba and the various visits to the West, in 1954, he was with us, he missed an opportunity to obey Baba, which shows that he really didn't grasp the importance of that, and that it, it's a connection with the love for Baba. And it happened this way. Dr. Ben Heyman arrived 2 days late at the darshan. That was in 1954, men's darshan. He didn't want to go, but Baba lover who had defected from Baba, Madha Lav is her name, paid his way to India. She knew that he had been her brother in the past incarnation, and she therefore was willing to pay his way, although he could very well have paid his own way. So when he came, he was sort of in a deep freeze, and he kept looking at Aruch during the darshan, during the meeting of the Western man with Baba. And Baba waved his hands and tried to attract his attention, but he wouldn't look up. There was a block, evidently. And Baba said to Malcolm Schloss to show Ben Heyman around, because Baba had showed us around the tomb and different buildings in the ashram, and that would make him feel more at home. So next day I asked Malcolm Schloss, did you show him around? He said, no. not necessarily Baba has infinite methods of drawing one to oneself if he wants to. So obviously that was the wrong answer. And I was rather surprised. I saw that it was wrong, although I was just a newcomer. And I couldn't obey Baba myself, but it's easier to to see the wrong done by another. Not painful. The Western men more or less belonged there together. Now, those that didn't belong were not there. For instance, Don Stevens. I was rather amazed when I heard that he was second in charge of Sufism Reoriented, and he wasn't there. So I asked the Sufis from the United States, Joseph Harb and Lud Dimple, why he didn't come, and they said, well, he's sick. Baba wanted him to write, to edit God Speaks, along with Mr. Deuce, and Don, being an executive in business, was evidently loath to do it. So Baba used one of his infinite methods. He was sick, and he had to stay home, and so he had plenty of time on his hands to do the work. But Don was sort of a loner, or he belonged in the class by himself, perhaps better than the rest of us, or some of us. Anyway, it fitted in best with Baba's plans, and he therefore had in the future access to Baba at Meher Azad any time that he passed by there, and that was not infrequently in his travels for Aramco. And another one that was absent was Dr. Harry Kenmore. He had come to the group there in New York just before me, and somehow he didn't go to India with us. And he regretted it very much afterwards, but too late. But Baba wanted it that way. He just, then after that, he went by himself again and again and stayed with Baba. And the group was not at all homogeneous, it was heterogeneous. There were great differences between us. For instance, Will Backett and Mary Backett got God the realization from Baba. I mean, Mary was not there, but the pair of them got God the realization. And he had been with Baba since 1931, I believe. And then there was I, the rank newcomer, and very intellectual. Baba said about me in private to Arush, boy, is he intellectual. And that means, in relation to Baba, just ignorant. Because as the Bhagavad Gita said, the mind is the slayer of the real. Slay the slayer. The mind is opposed to God. It is an instrument of Maya. And this shows up if you meet Baba with the intellect, then there's a conflict. I had a conflict of faith. I saw Baba as a human being at one time. And then next day I would see him as divine. But I couldn't get the two together. It just was a non-intellectual dilemma. Or problem. But Baba helped me, and I did get the faith as a result of that visit. Baba helped me in many ways. For instance, he would use the negative method. After showing us the tomb, he headed with all of us, for the gate, which is now gone, and it was locked, so Baba turned on his heel, and we after him. And I said to myself, well, if he's perfect, he should have known that it was locked. Of course, Baba did that on purpose. And so that put me in a conflict about Baba's perfection. And then the Monday night group had given me as a gift a bound volume of 3 Awakeners. And Baba, I showed it to Baba, and I said, well, they had given me this gift, and they were very kind to me. And Baba fondled it, and he kept it. And the next day, he returned it to me. And I wondered how come that if Baba is perfect, how come he forgot it? He gave it back to me. And, of course, Baba kept it for another reason. It was a blessing for me to write later on about Baba, interpret Baba. Baba said to me later, 56, you interpret me well. That was his blessing. And then I had given as my gift to Baba, each one of us brought some gift at that time, Baba accepted them, a golden watch that had been given to me as a gift, a pocket watch. And also the Monday night group sent with me, because I was going by boat, a suitcase for Baba, with Baba's initials. And I handed them to Baba, and the next day, when Baba gave me back the book, he also asked me through Arooch, which was my gift. And I was rather amazed, because I had indicated that the suitcase was from the Monday night group and the watch was from me. So these things threw me into a mental conflict about Baba's perfection. And I was somewhat, one day, skeptical. I was quite skeptical about it. I was standing there, and as Baba passed by me, I looked at him with I don't know what to call it, but it was a lack of respect. And Baba closed his eyes. He did not give me his darshan. But that's the mind. That's the result of meeting Baba with the mind instead of the heart. I noticed that Joseph Harb was very affectionate toward Baba and first meeting him, and we embraced Baba. My embrace was just perfunctory, more or less, and I wasn't used to embracing anybody, and so it wasn't cold, but it wasn't warm. But his was very affectionate. In later years, Joseph told me that he had not met Baba since Zoroaster. So that would account, presumably, for the longing and the love and so on. On the other hand, you might also argue that one would have cooled off in that long period. But it didn't work that way. Anyway, there are many factors. And Joseph was ready for realization, evidently, because Baba, when Joseph was critically ill in the hospital after an operation, Baba appeared to him there physically and asked him, do you want to go now or do you want to come back and meet me in another, in the next incarnation? And Joseph, who had in the meantime was one of us in 54, but this was in about 63, learned obedience, and he said, I leave it up to you, Baba, which is wonderful obedience. In that connection, to show how we didn't understand this point in 1954, hardly any of us, and that includes evidently Bill Backett, who had been with Baba and since 31, like Malcolm, and was with him in Nasik, 37. Baba asked us one day, what shall we do? Shall we be silent or shall we discuss things, and so on. And Baba went around in a circle and with us, and each one had some opinion to offer. And nobody said, it's up to you, Baba. You know best. Which would have been the intelligent thing to say. That was rather amazing from seeing it from the present, which is 17 years later. And it's still not easy to say that to Baba, to leave everything to Baba. One has to be 100% resigned. There was one young man from Australia, two young men that Francis brought. One of these disappeared entirely after having had Baba Darshan in 54, and I believe he has not ever been heard from to this day. And he was rather slow, and one day Baba had him. I didn't know that Baba wanted him to type for Purdom and Charles Purdom and Malcolm. They were working for to report by all the what that had happened at that darshan in the special issue of The Awakener. And I saw how slow he was, and I said, well, I can type better. Let me type. And they were quite upset about that. Lack of understanding on my part. Because it was very important. It is very important to do something when one is with Baba, because whatever you do, whatever energy you expend, is multiplied afterwards in the future. You're able to do Baba's work, you have the energy, and perhaps also the ability and the will. But fortunately for me, I always managed to be quite active when with Baba. Although one time in 1958, I missed an opportunity. Darwin Shaw came to me and said, will you go around and I think it was a matter of taking the signatures of each one for some reason. I was in such bad condition physically that, for one thing, I had arthritis in the neck, and quite painful. I just was out of sorts, and I refused, because I said to myself, well, he has a son who is young, and he can go around and do that work. And he did, in fact, but I missed an opportunity there. However, I did some other things. I typed something. I typed up the meeting the men had with Baba in Baba's house. And the women had their turn, and then we had our turn with Baba. And I wasn't very good at describing it, but what I did, I used a stratagem. I went around to all the men and asked for them to describe the experience. And I wrote down what each one said, and then I just integrated it into, made a nice report. Phyllis was very pleased with it. And that was all to the good. And in 62, I went around with Adi and sold some, let's see what it was, paintings of Baba. Very beautiful. They were only $5. There was one that Adi offered me for $25. It was just very beautiful and very much like Baba. Large painting. And I thought, well, it would be hard to carry on the plane. That was in 62. And might spoil it. And then I didn't have much money. However, so I said no. And then ended up by giving Adi $17 that I think he asked me for anyway. But there it was. so that I really did not want that picture. And Baba would have wanted me to have that picture and worship him because he had blessed me to image me, repeat my name and image me. I also sold Baba's literature there on the spot in connection with my love for Baba's pictures. Everyone loves Baba's pictures, but Baba blessed me in that connection. When I went in for my interview, I ran in. I wasn't aware that I was running into the tank building. And suddenly Baba came more than halfway, which is symbolic. And I suddenly had to stop short because there was Baba right in front of me. And I was wearing a little picture of Baba. It was pinned on my shirt, and it was turned the wrong side out, and so Baba straightened it out. And that touch was very significant because, although I had no idea at the time, it was Baba's blessing for me to love him through his pictures and worship him through his pictures. And that's what I've been doing ever since. It is in lieu of loving Baba directly, I love him through his pictures. And I must do it. I must touch all the pictures and kiss them, worship them, do aarti and burn incense and candle and so on. I repeat prayers. I do that regularly, many times a day, all these years. And other things, like keeping vigil at night. And then in that connection with the picture in 1956 when Baba was in New York, I was not invited to attend a meeting of the press with Baba. And that's when Baba asked Fred Marks and Fred Winterfell and John Bass, "Were you invited? Who invited you?" And I was quite disturbed about that because I wanted to be in on things. I came to Baba in order to work for his cause. I didn't come to Baba from love of Baba. I came for service. That was my idea. And here I was being denied the opportunity to know what's going on. I wanted to write about Baba and his message. Baba knew that, of course, and during the meeting, Baba made a sign towards me, and I couldn't, with his hand turning his hand. And it was, "Where is the picture?" I had taken off the picture without realizing it was Maya. But then after a while I realized, and I put the picture back on. I always wore a picture of Baba when, with him. And that was, again, a blessing to love Baba through his pictures. I wanted to have my picture taken with Baba in 54 because I didn't realize that this was a relationship with Baba forever. It wasn't just a visit to a holy man. And that was a mistake. So I wanted to have my picture with Baba, at least. And so I was hemmed in between Fred Marks, who was 6'4", and Lud Dimfel, who's very stout. So the cameraman pulled me out in front, and Baba was very displeased about that. He didn't want me to be forward because, after all, I was actually last among them. But then in 56, Baba came to me where in the restaurant where we were eating, all of us, and met with Baba. And Baba stood by me and put his hand around me, and we had the commercial photographer take our picture. And I wasn't too pleased with the picture because Baba looked a little cool. He was reflecting my lack of love. And so when I met him in 58, Baba took one look at me, and he was unhappy because he knew that I hadn't really appreciated that picture. Baba was showing in that picture that he was my father. And he also gave me a healing by holding his hand under my arm, left arm. I had a great pain in a nerve in the elbow, and I could hardly concentrate. And I was supposed to start writing for Baba, so Baba, eventually, in a couple of months, the pain left me, and for good. And every time I met Baba, I had some kind of a healing, because I had a lot of things wrong with me, physically, as well as mentally and emotionally. But I didn't realize it until that it was Baba that had healed me in that particular picture. And Baba gives us, he gives with sacrifice, and he gives silently and secretly. And you don't find that out until a long time later, in many cases. These physical healings are really a bonus, a special blessing from Baba, because primarily the idea is for us to get healed spiritually. But Baba wants us to be happy and to encourage us in every way to get that spiritual healing and to appreciate it, and by giving us the physical healings he gets that result often. But it means that Baba has to take on extra suffering, because that karma has to be paid for somehow. But Baba doesn't say anything about that. He just says that he suffers infinitely, vicariously, for one and all. So that is understood, therefore, in relation to the individual also. So one should at all times be infinitely thankful to Baba for whatever he gives, or even when he doesn't seem to give anything. And sometimes when he seems to deprive us of something but that we feel we should have, it's all for our best. On the one hand, we don't know how wonderful we are as souls in relation to our spiritual resources. And on the other hand, we don't know how terrible we are because of our ego and our sanskaras and our past in this and other lives. Baba doesn't stress the point of thankfulness. He somehow feels that it is all covered by love. If one loves Baba, then it follows that he will be thankful, and he will appreciate and understand and value. But of course, it doesn't always work that way, because we are all too human and we tend to take something for granted. For instance, I used to take for granted that whatever I get from Baba, well, I'm paying for it by my own suffering, by my work for Baba, so to speak. But that's